Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our Patreon supporters, this is your extended ad-free version of the show. And thank you to patrons including Gavin Driver, Kenji Yoshino, Matt Oram, Ram Rangaswamy, Richard Gunther, and the Collective Fraculous, who Ian and I know by a different name.
Yes.
And as such, will thank that person too. And indeed, all of these people who are supporting us directly. You can join them, get access to a full-length ad-free show, which this week is going to be a blinder, by going to patreon.com/UK Tech. A blinder is a term, Ian, that I've never really liked because it sounds horrifically violent and would result in the loss of vision.
Yeah.
Whereas actually what's coming up in the show later will just be a growth in knowledge.
Yes. Well, there should be an expression for that, shouldn't there?
Yes, it will be an excellent show. Please stick with us. But first, the news. The BBC has created a virtual assistant, digital one, that has released in beta version if you are...
No, beta.
Beta, okay. In a highly limited form, which is just for people in the UK who are also members of Microsoft's Windows Insider program and who are running a May 2020 Windows 10 build. Talk about niche. But much like the virtual assistants from Apple and Amazon and Google and Microsoft, and we're not going to say what they're called because it will trigger them. but the BBC's isn't widespread yet, so we'll pretend that this one isn't going to trigger anything. The BBC's OK Beeb can be triggered using a voice command without an app being open and can answer requests such as update me, which will prompt the latest BBC news, or play Radio 1 to play, you guessed it, BBC Radio 1, or tell me a fact, which will summon Sandy Toksvig to read a fact from the BBC show QI. Now, according to a write-up on, well, where else, the BBC website, a representative said, ultimately, we envision that Beeb will be available across a wide range of devices, including smart speakers, mobiles, televisions, and many others. Now, so far, it's so much the BBC kind of copying the Apple and Cortana and other things of the world of digital helpers. But there are some unique qualities that I'm actually quite excited to see develop further. One of them is accents. Now, digital assistants, as we've all giggled and guffawed about before, have struggled on occasion understanding sentences spoken by people with accents that are perhaps less commonly found in San Francisco, let's say. But the BBC's app, its developers, they have baked support and machine learning support for a huge number of regional British accents, which can be selected in a drop-down menu in the Windows app's settings area. Options are measured in the dozens, and I took a screenshot of someone demoing this and picked out a few just to give you an example, which include regions such as Antrim and Londonderry, or just Derry, in Northern Ireland, Aberdeenshire, and the East Lowlands of Scotland. We've got Mid, North, South, and West Wales all selectable, as well as a range of places in England, including Yorkshire, which is where I am from, although my accent doesn't sound it anymore. But big up the South Yorkshire Wickersley Tanyard masses, as well as the West Country, Merseyside, Cheshire, East Anglia, and Greater London. And there's loads of others. And in one of the demos I heard, the synthesized voice actually has a Northern English twang and not the kind of traditional, very old school BBC received pronunciation. You know, hello. You're listening to the BBC, and here is the Mrs. Wilberforce programme.
I think they should have used that voice.
it would have been brilliant, wouldn't it? We could do the podcast like that.
Well, we could, except I can't. I just like that. I prefer the idea of having an accent. I mean, you might want to finish this. Why don't you finish this story, and I'll tell you my thoughts. Go on, carry on.
All Okay, yes. Well, I did pick out a little demo because I wasn't able to access this, not being a member of Windows Insider and not having a Windows Insider build of Windows and blah, blah, blah. So instead, I had to revert to some YouTube clips of someone who did do it. And we've got one here from someone. Full credit goes to Ian Dixon, who is at thedigitallifestyle.com. YouTube channel, and we're going to include links to this because he's done a 5-minute demo, and that, so look for that full length. But look, full link there. But do you want to hear? Do you want to hear a sample of what this sounds
like?
Yes, please. This is a bit of him requesting the weather. Let's see if this works.
Radio two, I can say, okay, Beeb. What's my weather?
Okay, now for the weather. The temperature in Lancashire is 12 degrees Celsius. This afternoon will remain breezy and rather chilly with a lot of clouds.
Okay, B.
Patchy rain,
stop.
Too.
Okay, blah, blah.
Stop it like that as well.
So there we go. That's, so thank you, Ian Dixon, for not requesting payment for using that clip. But it's a great 5-minute clip, and we'll link to the whole thing. And I do strongly advise people go and have a listen to it.
Yeah,
it's a good demo. So do check that out. The link will be in the show notes as well. Now, the BBC is a multi-headed beast, I think it's fair to say, when it comes to the kind of products it offers. So in a given day, a household might read the news and sports in the morning, and then later at the moment do some homeschooling lessons with the kids or leave them with GCC Bite Size or something, then look up some recipes and tutorials for those recipes for things to make at lunch or at dinner, then maybe watch movies or something, or plan a workout or a day out the next day if the weather's good, and also check the weather. So there's loads and loads of things you can do with the BBC's content that's quite disparate. And so from that perspective, this feels like a smart thing to have, like a product that can be that central hub for BBC content. I also really like the idea that you might ask for a fact and get something from the famously brainy show QI. And by extension, I would assume, ask for a joke and maybe get something from a stand-up comedian from Live at the Apollo, or sports highlights from Match of the Day, or ask for the sound of something natural, like the sound of a dung beetle gobbling up and vomiting excrement, and hear the latest interview with Nigel Farage or someone. So I think that is all great, but on the flip side, we've got so many of these virtual assistants, and given that most of them allow other services to integrate with them, do we need to muddy the waters with yet another? But that's enough of my voice, Ian. I know you had some opinions to to send in, so why not send them in via the medium of your voice now?
Yeah, it's my voice. I mean, I think, well, there are two parts to this, obviously. There's the part that enables voice recognition to work better with regional accents, which is great. Obviously, we all want that. I seem to remember there's a very funny Scottish comedy sketch by a group I cannot remember the name of, but it's about a voice-activated lift that has trouble with Scottish accents. It's on YouTube. You should look it up. It's funny. We all want that. But the thing that I feel about voices, I mean, yes, there obviously are too many. This is always going to be an issue, isn't it? Because you don't want to have to go to your voice assistant and then start another voice assistant to do a query. What we want is, I guess we sort of want the big players in the voice assistant game to have some sort of mechanism by which you can sort of customize your voice assistant. So if the BBC goes to the effort of making one which can speak in different sort of accents or, tones, whatever, it's quite a good idea. And having access to the BBC's particular set of information is extremely useful. But I already find it kind of exhausting that you have to go through lots of steps to make voice assistants work. That just frustrates me endlessly. So I quite like that. And also, I personally find that I don't really want a British accent when I'm using a voice assistant. I want it to be more exotic than that. So I mean, if I'm going to use Apple's one, which I won't say, although you have to do the introductory word, I sort of prefer an American to deliver that. I want it to be different to what I normally hear. And I kind of feel like that gives it a kind of presence of its own, a unique voice in the house, if you want. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, although it's the first time I've heard an American accent be described as exotic. I thought you were going to say something like, you know, something from a remote region of
Well, I didn't say American. I said I'd prefer an exotic accent. I mean, an American is more exotic than British in this house because all of the people here speak British.
I just assumed when you said exotic, I was thinking about a little used accent from an island off the coast of Sweden or Norway or something.
Well, I mean, those would all be great. I mean, I'd love to have sort of, I mean, I suppose almost verging on the sort of comedy versions of accents, you know, where you have someone who can do quite a funny, you know, impression of, say, Russian or something like that, which is probably not exactly how the Russians would speak, but is sort of amusing nonetheless. Or, you know, any language. I mean, you can do, like, you could argue that the funny version of British is what you described as that kind of BBC thing. You know, so there's always, but I feel like I want it to be slightly different, and that entertains me, and I like it. But I would definitely take, I don't know, something more exotic than that. Caribbean, that would be fabulous.
Yeah, I mean, when you said exotic, I was thinking more like that. You know, something that wakes you up with Mahalo. Oh, that's not Caribbean, is it?
Well, that would be lovely. Yeah, Hawaiian,
that would be great. Yeah. I mean, I think that the real missed opportunity is to do with voice assistants what the likes of TomTom used to do with in-car GPS systems, where you can pay for language packs, because I would 100% have the Brian Blesseds of the world being my virtual assistant. I would pay.
Do you not think that would be a bit wearing on a voice assistant that you used quite a bit? I mean, you're not really a voice assistant guy, are you?
I actually do use the Apple one frequently. Particularly since I've been working at home. Yeah, I actually use it quite a lot.
Well, because you have speakers, don't you? And I don't. So.
I do it all on my iPad. It's always on my iPad. But I dictate quite a lot of stuff. I dictate a lot of emails and texts. And in fact, if you remember, a couple of weeks ago, I was out walking the dog, and I tend not to take my phone with me when I go for a walk, but I do have my Apple Watch on, and you texted me with something that I did want to reply to, and I think I replied at length, but also said, I'm dictating this via the Apple Assistant on my Apple Watch. So if
I have
this
memories of this.
Do you remember that? Yeah. But I mean, yes, it might get tiring, but if you had enough of them, or if it could pick one each day and it rotates, you have seven, and, you know, Sunday is Brian Blessed Day and Monday is somebody else. I think that'd be great. I mean, I'd pay money for that, but it's not really in the interest of the companies who make those services to try and monetize them that way, I don't think. But nonetheless, food for thought. And I like that the BBC is experimenting with this, because it does seem to offer something that the existing commoditized assistants of the world don't offer, which is highly country and platform specific, non-commercial digital assistants. You know, Amazon is very good if you want to buy products from it, and Apple's is very good if you want to use iOS or your iPhone better. But I think for something like the BBC, I don't know. I find myself thinking that's actually quite a good idea.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that struck me listening to that clip particularly was the fact that voice assistants with regional accents can get regional names correct. So you no longer do you have sort of hilarious mispronunciations of sort of British towns, cities, and regions, which can only be considered a good thing, because American voice assistants do struggle quite extensively with things like Leicester and others.
I remember getting into a conversation when you and I were at CNET still, when the Dig Nation guys came over, and for some reason we were doing something in the studio for the podcast or something with those guys, and they were saying that they'd got really confused about where we were, because they were looking for somewhere on the tube map called Southwark, and so they were looking for two words, Southwark, which in itself makes a lot of sense. You know, maybe it's somewhere south of the river that's very pedestrianized, but what they actually meant was Southwark.
Yes.
Which is where the CBS offices were at the time.
Yes. I mean, that is another good example of a word that... Yeah, and you can't entirely blame people, because it doesn't... There's no way to know when you read a word written down how it will be said, which is why we must call an end to the NVIDIA debacle.
Eventually, we will call an end to the NVIDIA debacle.
Yeah, but you once described Maplin as Maplin, so I've got that.
You have. and we will forever trade blows between those names, and it will define the next 2 decades of our friendship. The Evening Standard wrote this week that a London company specialising in gamifying the workplace with 3D scale models of offices said it's fielded loads of inquiries from bosses interested in replicating their corporate environments, but avoiding the Zoom video calls. The newspaper wrote that the Sims-style platform called Breakroom uses the technology behind the CineSpace online multiplayer game to mimic open-plan offices and transforms, this is a quote here, transforms staff into keyboard-controlled human, animal, or robot avatars able to wander around and speak with each other. Colleagues thousands of miles apart in the real world can chat via a virtual water cooler. Yes, Charlotte, who says in live chat, is exactly like Habbo Hotel. And even attend yoga sessions and pub quiz nights in a universe accessed through their web browser. That's a horrible write-up, but thanks for writing it because I hadn't read this anywhere else. The Standard also quoted chief exec of the company behind it, Cinewave Entertainment, as saying the £400 a month environments were about creating a sense of community without the need for structured conference calls. And apparently WeTransfer is a company that's built a gamified representation of its actual office.
Well, no surprise there.
Yeah. I looked at a video of this, and it looks like, it does look like a kind of if something like The Office, as in the TV show, was to parody digital workspaces, it would create something in Second Life and center the entire episode around that. And I think this is exactly what that would look like, where nothing would work as the people intended it to work, thought it should work, and no one would understand what they're meant to do, but everyone would have a lot of fun trying it out. So from that perspective, it sounds hilarious, and I hope lots of companies do it, because then we'll be inundated with hilarious videos of people failing to use it. I think it would be hilarious.
Yes, I despise this idea and wish a stubbed toe on all involved in creating it.
That's a bit harsh. It's perfectly fun and innocent.
A stubbed toe is the least harsh thing you can wish someone. I'm getting away from, you know, wishing that they'd all fall into the Thames. I'm trying to be gentle and kind to my fellow humans. But this is an idea without merit, and frankly, it would bother me intensely if a company I worked for decided to implement it. It sounds like a colossal waste of both time and money. I don't want to have business conversations with cats, or, you know, have to walk around to virtually find someone in an office environment. It just, does it not sound like the most annoying thing in the world to you?
You've changed, man. I remember a time when you would love to have had a conversation with a cat in an office.
Well, no, I mean, I would in the right situation. I suppose I'm thinking about it with my current working hat on, and I'm too busy and I don't have time for all the stupid video calls that we have as it is. So, you know, what on earth is the benefit to me of this? It just sounds like yet another waste of time, where, you know, everyone's sort of lost the plot and can't cope. I mean, look, we're all struggling to work at home. It is hard. It's not like being in office. You can't just walk over and say hi to someone. But again, this is exactly the kind of thing I have a problem with, things like this, because they require universal adoption to have any hope of succeeding. So for this to work, you have to talk to 100 people in an office and persuade them all that this is a good idea. And you have got no hope of doing that, like, unless it's mission critical. And even then, I've experienced mission critical business tools being sort of rejected by some people because they just don't want to or don't feel capable of learning a new system. And they're like, what's wrong with an email? And you're like, well, I mean, I kind of see your point there. What is wrong with an email? You know, because it works, it's quick and it's simple, and it doesn't cost £400 a month or whatever it is. But, you know, this kind of thing, just it It's a sort of thing that tech companies or companies in the tech space would probably go, oh, that's a lovely idea. And they would have more luck with it because they will have buy-in from more of their workers because they're going to be tech people.
I'm sitting here with a huge grin on my face, just listening to you strip the love and joy out of life. It's brilliant, mate. When you go to Disneyland, do you point out like the people dressed up and say, "Oh, unrealistic, mice are never that big. They don't stand upright. A mouse would never want to hug my daughter. This is ridiculous. Get out of here."
No, because it's not work.
Well, this is not meant to be work. This is obviously meant to be a bit of fun. I don't think anyone is seriously saying that this is going to replace Zoom. I mean, just to describe it for the benefit of people listening, one of the screenshots of this shows a virtual, very large virtual boardroom with about 8 to 10 people sitting around a giant table. And at the end of the giant table is a huge virtual wall with two actual human beings on their Zoom call being projected sort of onto it. So it's, you can sort of see your colleagues around the table, but see the actual two colleagues who are speaking to each other at the very end. And it looks quite sweet. I think it looks adorable. I'd never use it, but I'd love to see companies try. Yeah, and I think
I'd love to see Bloomberg adopt this. Michael Bloomberg coming in for an office like a cat. Just not how business works. There's not enough time for the work, let alone for the flipping stupid virtual world. Honestly, wow. People have got too much time on their hands. This is something that might be applicable to people socially outside of work. If you want some joy from me, then yeah, this would be a nice alternative to sort of video calls. And one of my objections to this kind of current trend of, you know, pub nights on Zoom or quiz nights on Zoom is that I spend a percentage of my day on video calls. I don't want to do it again in the evening, particularly.
That's fair.
Yeah. So, but this gives that a completely different look. So you're like, oh, well, actually, you know, that's kind of a bit more fun. That's something that, you know, you could actually have that in a virtual pub and people could appear, you know, as avatars or as video if they wanted to. So, yeah, you know, as a social thing, that's actually quite a sweet idea. As a work thing, it is meritless and will fail.
Do you wrap your kids' birthday presents up, or do you just give them an Amazon box and say that's the nice paper serves no benefit?
I think you're willfully distorting what I'm saying to construct a straw man with which to beat me. No, I don't do that. I wrap it up. I've got so much wrapping paper here in this room. I'm looking behind me now. I've got about 7 rolls of wrapping paper for various ages of child. So no, I don't do that.
Okay. If you'd have used them, you'd probably have had less of it lying around, but that's a story.
Because I buy a new roll of paper every time a major event appears. Because I can never remember where I put it. It's right over there. You should just remind me next time. It's just there.
So, oh, it's there, is it?
It's there. It's there. It's right there. So the next time I'm in, you know, Tesco buying another roll of paper, just go, Ian, it was there.
Other distributors of horse meat burgers that also sell wrapping paper are available. If you have an opinion on this virtual office environment, then do obviously send it to us at the usual place. And if you have a company that has adopted this and have some amusing videos of your fellow colleagues trying and failing to use it, please send them to me as well. Don't bother sending it to Ian because he has no time for fun. Guess who's making a comeback later this year, Ian, with an 18-part podcast series?
Is it Jesus?
Nope, it would be far more than 18 parts, I think, if Jesus did it. No, but you're close. It is Alan Partridge. He's got a new podcast series coming out called From the Oust House, the Alan Partridge Podcast.
Yes.
And I adore Alan Partridge and indeed have been compared to Alan Partridge and weirdly Jeremy Clarkson as a broadcaster before now, which I'd never really known if that's a diss or a compliment.
I can see the accidental Partridge coming from you in some situations. I mean, a lot of this podcast, I could see Alan Partridge doing your very wonderful segues. I feel like that's something that you two have in common.
Yes. I did once pitch to get Alan Partridge on this podcast once by sending his opinions of certain tech innovations through the years to his agent to explain what I thought Alan would say about those and therefore what I think he should come on the show and discuss. They said it was a very good idea, but he was very busy. So it never happened.
It is a very good idea. And I can imagine that he is very busy. Maybe he'll do it to promote this. Why don't you retry?
People in the live chat are saying I mispronounced the name of his show. How should it be pronounced?
Oh, well, here we go. We should get the Beeb thing to do it.
It's spelt OAST and then house. I pronounced it oust house.
Well, as oust
in
is...
To pronounce.
Well,
it's supposed to be outhouse because he said he records it in his shed. So it's meant, I thought it was like outhouse, which is a, you know, another word for an old toilet. And I
boast
thought that would be his
the
fun.
B,
oust
says
house.
Nick. Oast without the B.
Oast house.
Oast.
Oast. Why would it be oast house? As in coast house?
Without the C.
Well, this is what people I'm sure are tuning in to listen to is me. Oh, he says it's that because that's how you pronounce it. Okay, well, that's probably very fair. I do not proclaim to be an expert in all things pronounceological. But, Nick says oast house is where you dry hops for brewing. And John agrees. Okay, I'll defer to the listeners because they are far smarter than I am. So fair enough. Alan Partridge is creating a series called The Oast House. He actually, in some promotional material, gave a quote. Would you like me to read the quote?
I would love that.
From Alan. Like most people, I assumed that those who hosted podcasts were pale, tech-obsessed, social lepers who live with their mums and couldn't get a platform on any meaningful broadcaster, so started spouting their bloated opinions into their USB microphones to flatter their groaning sense of self-importance. But then I spoke to a man I'd never heard of before from Audible. He called me and made me an offer. I countered. He came back. I countered again. In short, we've hammered out the details to my satisfaction, and the result is a series of podcasts. They've been described as very good / sensational.
who wrote that? Do you reckon he wrote it, or do you reckon that was one of the writers who wrote it?
Well, he does write it, but he writes it with the Gibbons brothers, and I would imagine it was them.
One of them, No, it's very good.
Who wrote that?
I particularly enjoy the USB microphone dig, he said, into his USB microphone.
That was one of the two points I wanted to raise because actually he's nailed it. I am quite pale. I am tech obsessed. I wouldn't describe myself as a social leper and I don't live with my mother.
Yeah.
I also have got a platform on a broadcaster, but I did decide to spout my opinions, which probably are bloated. And I do sort of use a USB microphone in that it's a rather impressive Sennheiser MK8, which connects via...
Oh, Jesus, you're doing it. You're actually doing it. You're doing the Partridge.
An XLR cable from the fine people at Stag, and that goes into a Behringer XLR mixing desk, but that outputs over USB. So he's got me half over a barrel.
Oh, that microphone's very good. Not my words. The words of Podcast Magazine.
Yeah. Shaking Stevens. Once used this.
Oh, genius. Well, oh,
that is lovely stuff.
I think this is a great idea, and I'm very excited about it. I'm aware I'm going to have to pay for it.
Well, that's the other thing I wanted to point out. So we've actually covered both of them without the need for an artificial segue.
It's very professional work of us here.
It's because it's not a podcast. It's the Alan Partridge podcast that is exclusive to Audible that you have to pay for and that downloads in one fat chunk. So it in no way is a podcast. But in a way, that's kind of almost a Partridgian thing to do, isn't it? To name something that is zeitgeisty that actually isn't what it is at all.
Yeah, I mean, Coogan wasn't going to get out of bed for nothing, was he? Let's be honest. And why should he?
Yeah.
He has a very saleable idea in Partridge that will, I think, run and run, because it has proven that it's capable of running and running. It is consistently entertaining and isn't afraid to change how it approaches the world as things go on. He did that Sky series, you know, with Norfolk Digital, which
Mid Morning Matters,
yes, which was sponsored, wasn't it, originally? So they made it watch it for free. That's right. It was free online, and then they had a longer version of it that was shown on Sky. I seem to remember. Is that right?
Sky Atlantic, I believe.
A very funny place to put it, but fair enough. yeah, so I mean, you know, this all sounds like it could be quite a lot of fun. The idea of Alan uncensored, if you will, not beholden to a broadcaster, is quite a nice idea, and done well, I think it could be very funny indeed. So we'll see. The pain about Audible is it's very expensive to buy one thing on Audible, and I got very angry. You might remember this. There was a revelation. I was subscribing to Audible and amassing audiobook credits, and it became clear that you could only have 7 credits in one go. And I was outraged by this. I was like, well, they're my credits. I've paid for them. It's not like this isn't a, you know, this is not like a, not billed as a monthly subscription as such. It's billed as you're buying a credit a month or whatever. But they will only let you hold 7. So I was like, well, no, then I'm cancelling it. And then I used up my 7 credits on things that I kind of wanted, and cancelled, and haven't looked back, frankly. But buying an individual thing on Audible tends to be very expensive, which is a shame.
Yes. Well, I mean, the whole model is around getting you to just buy extra credits. So I think this costs about £20 if you're not a member, but you can buy a credit. So, like, but for the sake, it doesn't matter.
Is the whole thing, or are all 18 parts one credit? Is that how they're doing it?
Yeah. All 18 parts are one credit. If you're looking forward to the new Alan Partridge audio book, as I think it should be fairly called, do let us know. Also, you can tell us any of your favourite Partridgian quotes. Always like to hear those. And you can send those to us. As well as, I fancy a day out tomorrow, so if you know any cracking owl sanctuaries, I'm well up for a recommendation as well. We keep you informed about all sorts of things, mostly tech news, mostly that concerns Britain. Do you know who doesn't? Tom Merritt. He has a global view. Here's what he's been talking about on Daily Tech News Show this week.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, we got tips on speaker placement from Patrick Norton, talked about companies' relationships to law enforcement, wondered whether we'll actually want to go to CES now that it's for sure back on, and talked over Samsung's new Access program bundling in Microsoft 365 with a phone. And on Monday, we took a pause and we heard from 6 black folks in tech about their experiences. If you skip the rest, listen to that one at dailytechnewsshow.com.
Ian, it's been a pleasure. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.